When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We all know real life can suck sometimes, and your boss accidentally seeing you in your underpants on Zoom last week doesn't help any.
That's why reluctantly codependent sisters, the Shira and Rishalia, keep you enthralled and in stitches every week with their podcast, Legendary Africa.
Every Monday and Friday, we take you on a journey of mythical lands, magical objects, and monstrous creatures, both ancient and modern.
Find Legendary Africa on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you feed your ears. And remember, stay safe,
stay sexy,
and stay legendary.
Hello, and welcome to the Monster Legends Podcast. I'm your host, Hanner, and in this episode is Florida. We'll begin this episode by talking a little bit about Florida. This is from history.com. Florida, which joined the Union as the 27th state in 1845, is nicknamed the Sunshine State, and known for its balmy climate and natural beauty. Spanish explorer Juan Ponce de Leon, who led the first European expedition to Florida in 1513, named the state in tribute to Spain's Easter celebration known as Pascua Florida, or Feast of Flowers. During the first half of the 1800s, U.S. troops waged war with the region's Native American population. During the Civil War, Florida was the third state to secede from the Union. Beginning in the late 19th century, residents of northern states flocked to Florida to escape harsh winters. In the 20th century, tourism became Florida's leading industry and remains so today, attracting millions of visitors annually. Florida is also known for its oranges and grapefruit, and some 80% of American citrus is grown there. Florida became a state on March 3rd, 1845. Did you know Walt Disney World Resort, which opened near Orlando in 1971, is the planet's biggest and most visited recreational resort, spread over some 30,500 acres, about the same size as San Francisco, California. Disney World attracts approximately 46 million annual visitors. Capital of Florida is Tallahassee. There is 18,801,310 people in Florida. Florida is 65,758 square miles. It is nicknamed the Sunshine State. The state motto is "In God We Trust." The state tree is a sable palm. The state flower is the orange blossom. And the state bird is the mockingbird. Interesting facts. Spanish explorer Pedro Menendez de Avilés established the first permanent European settlement in the United States at St. Augustine in 1565. Before he was president of the United States, General Andrew Jackson led an invasion of Seminole Indians in Spanish-controlled Florida in 1817. After Florida became a U.S. territory in 1821, Secretary of State John Quincy Adams appointed Jackson its military governor. Constructed over a 21-year period from 1845 to 1866, Fort Zachary Taylor in Key West was controlled by federal forces during the Civil War and used to deter supply ships from provisioning Confederate ports in the Gulf of Mexico. The fort was also used during the Spanish-American War. In 1944, airman and pharmacist Benjamin Green from Miami developed the first widely used sunscreen to protect himself and other soldiers during World War II. He later founded the Copperstone Corporation. John Glenn became the first American to orbit the Earth when he blasted off from Florida's Cape Canaveral on February 20th, 1962. 7 years later, Neil Armstrong became the first man to walk on the moon after Apollo 11 was launched from the nearby Kennedy Space Center on July 16th, 1962.
Oh, okay. Hey, everyone.
I'll remind you, you can listen to the Monster Lens podcast on Anchor, Apple Podcast, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Spotify. You can also join the Facebook group at Monster Lens Podcast or follow on Twitter. And if you want to send an email, you can send it at Monster Lens Podcast at G. Okay, the first freaking gators down there. The Mika, M-Y-A-K-K-A, or the Skunk Ape. This is from Lauren Coleman. Two remarkable new photographs of what may be a Florida skunk ape have been discovered through an interesting chain of events by Sarasota residents and animal welfare specialist David Bargassi. Bigfoot, the true story of apes in America, overviews how these photographs were taken, how this finding surfaced, the first reactions, analysis, and some tentative conclusions. For the time being, certain supportive notes will remain here, available, and online. Here's the December 22nd, 2000 letter signed, God bless, I prefer to remain anonymous, mailed to the Sarasota Sheriff's Department. Newspapers in Florida, the Art Bell Show, and other radio programs during mid-February decided to talk about the Miyaka photographs. The hope is that the woman photographer would be identified. In the meantime, meaningful analysis of the eye shine, the pupil diameter, the detention, the tongue, hair color, exhibited behavior of the parent primate is. These Coleman enlargements and details were created for the first generation color prints scanned by David Barksy of the Sarasota Sheriff's County Sheriff's Department originals. These prints show forehead lines, yellow canines, fingernails, hair, and other significant details. Copyright 2001 by David Barksy has finger. Blew concurrent with my thinking, Tony Schumann, a biologist with the Canadian Wildlife Service, pointed out some features on a good photograph of a orangutan by Denise McGuillan. This is not to say that macabre photographs aren't of an orangutan, but it certainly exists in identifying features are found on known anthropoid that appear to exist. The Mika ape head close-up, copyright 2001 by David Barksy and Laura Coleman, compared with the Sumatran head front. Try to describe what I'm saying. It's two pictures of this picture of the thing they took and one of a orangutan, and they're pointing out different features that are similar. Could this be a skunk ape? And as yet undiscovered, large anthropoid part of the unknown Pongan type discusses in the field guide to big Simora graphs. A really recent monster of skunk ape and related anthropoid reports have failed in the book. Her fallen leaves attempt to discover this photograph. It's been nearly 9 months and there's been no appearance of the Mika skunk ape, at least no official reports. This past February, newspapers throughout the Southeast caused a supernatural frenzy when the ran stories about the appearance of a smelly ape nearly 7 feet tall in a backyard east of I-75 in Sarasota. Some writers quickly dismissed the idea of Flair's answer to Bigfoot. Others used the opportunity to tell a few jokes, and some suggested Magdalene organizing a search, i.e. hunting party, to find the animal that resembles an orangutan. One local man has done just that. Dave Broccoli is on the prowl. Broccoli is one of the first people to see the photograph of the ape last fall after getting mailed anonymously to the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office. Since then, curiosity has been in overdrive. It's the possibility of finding something new, Presley says, of his search for the skunk ape. I don't know if there's seeing this like a,
oh, okay. Hey, everyone.
I'll remind you, you can listen to the Monster Lens podcast on Anchor, Apple Podcast, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Spotify. You can also join the Facebook group at Monster Lens Podcast or follow on Twitter. And if you want to send an email, you can send it at Monster Lens Podcast at you. Does a lake clinch serpent kill me? On Cryptozoology Blogspot. Does Lake Clinch in Polk County have a lake serpent? The lake contains a quite large fish stock of largemouth bass, bluegill, and black crappie. There's a food source to sustain something in the lake. However, there is some controversy over whether there is a tradition of a creature. There's a tradition that a sea serpent or a lake serpent used to haunt Lake Clinch. M.F. Hetherington wrote in his 1928 A History of Polk County. The Indians, many years ago, insisted there was an immense serpent in this lake. In 1907, Wren's Frostproof declared they had seen the monster and that it must be 30 feet long. This too, before post-prohibition liquor was known in the opposite opinion. Modern inquiries to local libraries and newspapers failed to produce any leads or archival reports. Newton wrote, it is entirely possible that Lake Clinch has produced some cryptid sightings in the past, or that may figure in the Aboriginal mythology, but as of press time for the work in hand, no further information. However, I found this an interesting story from 1926 about a man thought to have been killed by a large serpent in a lake. Is a story. But talk about a lake creature persisted. Settlers spoke of something in the lake, and early pioneers, including citizens, claimed to have seen a 30-foot-long sea serpent while boating or from the shore. On the night of August 30th, 1926, 49-year-old Charles M. Mallett stepped out of his simple Florida cracker-style home, wearing a bathing suit and carrying a tackle box and bait. Mallett was a businessman, founder of the town's first bank, and partner in a prosperous fertilizer and supply company that served the local growers. He was a practical man, and tales about a giant serpent inhabiting the lake adjacent to his home did not worry him as he prepared to venture onto the legendary monster's domain. Foregoing fishing, Mallett had told Sullivan Associates that he would be leaving for Sarasota the next day. Absent from his usual haunts in the coming week, he stopped long enough to wave to a neighbor that made his way down to the dock. Like other men in Frostproof, he kept a small boat at the pier and frequently fished for the largemouth bass that were and are abundant in the lake. It was Florida's monsoon season. There had been heavy rain this afternoon, but now it was clear skies as Mallett boated his boat and headed onto a smooth, dark water. 3 days later, on Thursday morning, G.D. Moore cast a fishing line into Lake Clinch from the eastern shore. While reeling it in, he snagged something big, a human body. The features were so mangled, and given the condition, it might have remained unidentified. The name faintly engraved on the inside of the band was Charles M. Mallett. To confirm the identity, a person was dispatched from his trip. One of Mallett's employees covered the door of the cracker's house unlocked, and Mallett's personal effects in the suitcase awaiting his return from the lake. There was no doubt that the body was that of Charles Mercer Mallett. But what happened out on the Lake Clinch? It is likely a physician or a district coroner examined Mallett's body. Polk County did not have a medical examiner until the 1970s. A record of his death has been found in the states. So did Mallett meet the serpent out of the lake? Local stories would have, if they did. I've been unable to find any recent sightings of anything that, like, Klein dismissed that as folklore, but if anything, okay. I live on Lake Clinch. I fish the southern shore on, this is a comment. I live on Lake Clinch. I fish the southern shore on some mornings. There's something laying on a dock, something very large. It also just seems to plop into the water before I'm able to see it. Then at certain times, in the early hours, what looks to be a turtle's head, but about a foot in diameter, but only the southern shore that I'm aware of. 2 to 4 mornings per week between 3 to 5 a.m. I'm right on the water, so I'm always viewing the lake. I wouldn't live any place else in Florida. Highest point in Florida is also right down the road. Oh, okay. Hey, everyone. I'll remind you, you can listen to the Monster Lens podcast on Anchor, Apple Podcast, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Spotify. You can also join the Facebook group at Monster Legends Podcast or follow on Twitter. And if you want to send an email, you can send it at Monster Legends Podcast. Next up is the Monk Monster. This article is from Cryptopedia.us by Rob Morphy, published February 10th, 2010. The mysterious serpentine creature was captured by shock eyewitnesses on a videotape as it slithered just beneath the surface of Florida's Lake Worth Lagoon. Once this strange footage was unleashed, it created one of the most intense monster frenzies in U.S. history. In late August of 2009, Greg Reynolds and Dan Serrano, representatives of Lagoon Keepers, a nonprofit organization that paints and cleans the Palm Beach County waterways, were sent to cover what they believed to be a log from the Lake Worth Lagoon. But when they arrived on the site, they realized that what was actually in the water was something infinitely more bizarre, not to mention alive. Reynolds said he around tried to catch up to it, but that every time they would get within 10 feet of the creature, it dove, resulting in it named the Lucis Muck Monster. General comment in the strange sighting. I didn't know what it was. I was like, hey, look, and we moved over and saw it. It was different. Very different. It was an unusual wake. We saw it move along, creating some deep ripples, then it just dipped deeper underwater. Reynolds, who shot the video of what he believes to be a sea monster, uploaded the footage onto his company website. Within days, these unexplained images went viral, and it wasn't long before the legend of the now notorious Muck Monster was born. Reynolds describes the encounter to the local news station. Channel Marker 10 is the first time we saw the unknown creature. I hollered out and said, what is that? We followed it. Started talking video. It's not a shark or manatee. Sharks would have their fins above the water. It's something much different. The video soon became a worldwide sensation that was covered by major news groups, including NBC and Fox. And the Muck Monster even became enshrined in television history as topic of one of David Letterman's lauded top 10 lists. Reynolds described monsters shockingly switched attention to the public eye. Phone keeps ringing. Showed up on CNN, Coast to Coast Radio, 95.5 Wild Morning Show, K-Rock out of F.T. Myers. It's everywhere. Just do a search on Muck Monster and it comes up on every corner of the world. Of course, with quick frames comes the promise of even quicker money. And it would seem that it's a bad one that the entire community is jumping on. City Commissioner William Moss reacting to the fact that video site had received over 4 million hits on their tourism website secured enough support to install a telescope near where the monster has been spotted. These claims is just the beginning of a campaign to notice tourists the area to what he believes is their Primeville town mascot. We're going to have a naming contest. We'll also have a feeding station, which will have a fish pellets. I think it's prehistoric personality. A lot of other people agree with me. Reynolds himself is trying to turn this publicity into more funding for this nonprofit community by selling t-shirts that read, I'm not the Muck Monster, but he insists all proceeds will go to helping the lagoon keepers maintain our beautiful waters. Of course, other independent entrepreneurs have also gotten in on the act. The phenomenon does not stop while the eyewitnesses or city officials at the local tiki bar Seagirl is now serving a Muck Monster special, which is a lightly sautéed Muck Monster served over the rice with caper lemon pepper sauce with a little sautéed spinach. For those who appetite stare towards that aperitif, there's the Muck Monster cocktail, which upon request, bartenders will serve with a completely Muck Monster, complimentary Muck Monster dance. Okay. With all this ring-a-mole, it's a little wonder that legitimate crypto investors are trading the Muck Monster wars very carefully. While this post encounter marketing bazan in no way invalidates initial sightings, it's very difficult to see past such a crassly commercial feeding frenzy to find the science that may lie beneath. To try and understand what this creature may be, one must look at the history of the lagoon. The body of water that is now known as the Lake Worth Lagoon was, in the mid-1800s, a freshwater lake, which derived of all its run by its ground seepage from Everglades, one river, reputed home of the skunk ape. In 1866, a settler named Lane allegedly dug a channel between the lake and the ocean, and by 1877, the lake had been transformed to a saltwater lagoon. Is it possible that a sea serpent or other anomalous marine animal made its way through one of the lagoon's channels to find itself a home in its blackish filled waters? Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission marine biologist Thomas Reinhart scrutinized the video and claimed that he was baffled by the mystery. This appears to be one animal moving in direction nothing. Nothing's breaking the surface. Typically, dolphins break the surface. Sea turtles, manatee, large school of fish. If it were a shark at that level, you would see a fin. I can't definitely say what it is. I can't speculate, but we need more evidence to determine the identity of the Lake Worth muck monster. The only one who seems willing to speculate as to the genesis of the monster's stunning appearance is Palm Beach Mayor Lois Frankel, who became named for the muck monster. An official citizen of Palm Beach told the local press, "This has actually become a pretty serious business. We'll be visited by CNN, who will be looking for the muck monster. In all seriousness, what I think has happened is that because of all the work on the waterfront, the building of the seawall, and all the construction going down there, it has stirred up this creature." In the end, Reynolds feels that people should still treat this potentially dangerous aquatic oddity with caution, and cites that the ocean still has many secrets locked in her depths. "We have spent a lot of time out here on the water and seen a lot of different creatures out there, and this is the first time in 3.5 years that I've ever seen anything out here that I didn't know what it was. The water is teeming with life. Who knows what's in there?" Who indeed? What? This is like ripples. Oh, okay. Hey, everyone. I'll remind you, you can listen to the Monster Lens podcast on Anchor, Apple Podcast, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Spotify. You can also join the Facebook group at Monster Lens Podcast or follow on Twitter. And if you want to send an email, you can send it at Monster Lens Podcast at G. Next one. From the Smithsonian Institute Archives. This was published on August 18, 2010 by Mary Marquis. What was the St. Augustine monster? According to Wikipedia, it was a globster, an unidentified organic mass that washes up on the shoreline of an ocean or other body of water. This great granddaddy of globsters kept cryptozoologists speculating and scientists testing for a century and a piece of his life at the Smithsonian. There's a picture of a thing, and the body measures 18 feet in length by 10 feet in breadth. It must weigh not less than 5 or 6 tons, and is, of course, quite offensive. Dr. Webb to Smithsonian in December 1897, Rue 829, Rue Monster 1897 by D. Webb photograph. St. Augustine monster was discovered by two young boys on Antasia Island, Florida in November 1896. Assumed it was a whale and reported their find to Dr. DeWitt Webb, a founder of St. Augustine Historical Society, an institute of science. It's a picture of a boy with a something or a person. Let's say the boy the most actual. We found, however, that with all efforts that a dozen men pulling at the ropes were not enough to give even turn the monster over. As it is, the exhibition cost me over $10. Dr. Webb to the Smithsonian on photographing the monster, January 1897. Dr. Webb noted that the enormous carcass appeared to have stumps of several arms or tentacles. He included that it was the remains of a gigantic octopus and contacted Yale's professor Addison E. Verrill, who went to press in 1897, declaring the discovery of what he named Octopus Gigantus Verrill. Webb also sent photos and a specimen to Smithsonian in 1897. National Museum curator William Haley Dale accepted the material as accessions of the muscle element of the body of Octopus Gigantus. The title page of Smithsonian Accession Records of the St. Augustine Monster. Later, Professor Barrow had an opportunity to examine a sample of the carcass and, oops, determined that the St. Augustine Monster was actually the upper part of a sperm whale's head. Unfortunately, his new collusion didn't receive the proper press attention on the previous announcement. Webb's original photograph were mislaid, newspaper articles baited, and other glossaries such as Dunk Island Carcass, 1948, and the Tasmanian Blob, 1960, took their brief moments in the limelight. During the 1970s and 80s, in the wake of the popularity of the book Chariots of the Gods, 1968, and TV programs such as BBC series Austin Clark's Mysterious Worlds, monsters once again captured the public's imagination. As if a gigantic octopus wasn't enough, one author even speculated that it was the remains of a giant space alien. What the fuck? Okay. Enough interest was generated through the Smithsonian began receiving requests for samples of the monster. In 1971, a pair of tests to other marine animals suggested that it was octopus tissue. In 1986, tests for amino acids appeared to support the gigantic octopus theory. However, in 1995, electron microscope and biochemical analysis indicated that the material was collagen from a warm-blooded animal. In 2004, DNA tests applied to St. Augustine samples along with other monsters remnants from around the world identified all as a collagen matrix that holds together whale blubber. And slightly more than a century, science had confirmed what the two Augustine boys originally reported in 1886. The remains of a whale had washed up on Antasia Island. Richard Ellis, author of the 1994 book Monsters of the Sea, was quoted in the New York Times, "I'm crushed. It's a blow for people who will continue to want there to be a great scary monster out there. It may be the requiem for Blood Dome." Okay, identified at last, the Smithsonian famous monster reposes in collection and storage as National Museum History, Octopus Gigantus tissue. Dr. Webb's own words about discovery are as Smithsonian Institute archives in the corners, memorial of the Assistant Secretary of the U.S. National Museum, right? The boys found a little whale, and he got comes in. Oh, I think it's an octopus.
Okay.
About Christmas time, make some cookies. It's Christmas time, make some cookies, you know? And, girl time, it's 22nd. About Christmas time, I think I'll figure I'll give you a little extra tidbit. This is an article, it's from pathios.com. The Child Eating Scarecrow, published on December 11th. Hans Trapp is a legendary figure in the Alsace and Lorraine regions of France. While there are several variations of the tale, the most popular one says that he was a cruel man of great wealth. However, he acquired his wealth not through hard work, but from acts of magic and pacts with demons. He himself, being a man who worshipped Satan, it's said that he was heartless and vain, greedy, and would revel in sin. When the Vatican had heard of Trapp's cruelty and occultism, he was arrested and brought before the Pope. He was excommunicated for Satanism and demonology, and upon returning back home to France, he discovered that his land and property were confiscated from him, and he was left without a single penny. The villagers of his hometown shunned and banished him to the woods in nearby Germany. Large and full of scorn from those who took everything away from him, he devoted himself more and more to his dark sorcery. All he could think about was taking revenge on the villagers who exiled him. His hermitage in the woods made him go insane, and soon he found himself craving the taste of human flesh. He became obsessed with the idea of cannibalism, so he came up with a plan. He would disguise himself as a scarecrow, wearing raggedy clothing and stuffing it with straw and sticks, and would wait in the fields for his prey to come by. One day, a very young shepherd boy came strolling through the field. Taking a sharpened stick, Hans Trapp thrust into the child and killed him, dragging his corpse back to his house, where he butchered the child to pieces and roast him over his fire. Just as he was about to take the first bite of the flesh he had craved so much, it is said that God struck him with lightning. Falling down, he hit his head and died. Parents of the northeastern region of France warned their children that every Christmas, Hontrap's spirit would come back dressed as a scarecrow with a hood to enact his revenge by abducting naughty children in the forest where they were never seen again. The legend of Hontrap seems to originate from the real life of Hans von Trotha, who was born in 1450 and died in 1503. Hans von Trotha was a knight who was entrusted with two castles in the Palestine territory, which included territories of both France and Germany. He had a dispute with an abbot over property and possessions in one of the castles that he was given, which is supposedly originally the monastery's possession that the abbot refused to give them up. So Hans von Trotha created a dam which stopped the water supply of the village below. The abbot complained and he finally tore down the dam, which flooded the village below and caused a massive economic damage. Hans von Trotha began attacking the abbot, and when the emperor couldn't persuade Hans von Trotha to stop, the abbot went to the Vatican. The Pope summoned Hans von Trotha to be questioned about his loyalty to the church. He declined the visit instead writing a letter accusing the Pope of immorality. In response, he was excommunicated and had an imperial ban upon him by the emperor shortly after his excommunication. He died 2 years later of natural causes. Alexander VI, original Spanish name, and full Regio de Bacora, Regio was born to the Spanish branch of the prominent and powerful family. Despite the shadow of Gethsemane, the surrounding. Okay. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Thank you for listening to this episode of Monster Legend Podcast. In order to find more information about Monster Legend Podcast, go to monsterlegendpodcast.com or anchor.fm/monsterlegendpodcast. There you can find all episodes and platforms on which the podcast is on, which you can subscribe to. You also can email me with questions that will be answered on the show. Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.